Welcome to a new episode of the Life Science Get Together podcast. Recently, I read in two studies, one is from McKinsey, that the early stage, scene in Europe evolved tremendously, but still has some problems to solve. What is this early stage deep tech investment scene exactly? It's basically the development area when new innovations and ideas come out of university and are not yet projects, but are put in a company and hopefully become projects or products in the future. And McKinsey stated that although Europe has world-class universities and world-class scientists that produce world-class science and file a tremendous amount of patents every year, McKinsey came to the conclusion that still there are a lot of unsolved problems in this area. So I thought it's a good idea to shine a little bit more light on how tech transfer evolved during the pandemic and what the future of this mysterious tech transfer is in Europe, and invited Dr. Sara Inkinen to this podcast. Welcome to the podcast, Sara.
Thank you so much, Christian. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Good to see you. Sara, let's start with a little bit from this McKinsey study. I mean, the problematic area they pointed out is the area of tech transfer. And probably it makes sense to first start with a definition what tech transfer is exactly.
Yes, sure. So maybe it's better to first start kind of from the broader perspective and then talk about what this means, for example, in the context of academic organizations or scientists. So in general, technology transfer, tech transfer plays a key role in how research and science can address global challenges, such as, for example, now the ongoing pandemic, the climate crisis, food availability, different health questions, aging population, and so on. So in short, it is about facilitating the conversion of ideas into new opportunities and into new business.
So how is it working in reality? How is the process in this area?
Well, when we, for example, think about the academic technology transfer, so we have first the researchers who are producing ideas, new inventions, data, in some cases, apps, for example. Then we have the technology transfer in the middle as an intermediary and facilitating the transfer of these ideas and inventions, the research products, the research results into industry. So it refers to this process in which knowledge, both knowledge and technology are transferred from research to organizations or companies that can then utilize it and commercialize it. And typically this process happens, or the conversion, the transfer happens through licensing or sales of the IP, or, for example, through the creation of new startups or spin-offs.
Let's discuss a little bit about these different opportunities. I find it very interesting. You mentioned on one hand, you have the opportunity to license technology to a license partner. The second one you mentioned is selling the IP. And the third one is the startup. Can you give a little bit more background to these three scenarios that you are pursuing? How did they look like and how they work?
Yes, of course. So maybe first, it's also important to remember that we are not only talking about patents, even though it's maybe one of the best known examples of IP. So the transfer can also concern, for example, different types of data, trade secrets, even, of course, as I mentioned already, apps nowadays, designs, trademarks, and so on. So it can be a package of different elements. And what is the best way? What route should be selected? Yeah, that's a critical question. And I think there is no clear answer. It's very case specific. But in general, of course, licensing is one of the main routes, and creation of startups, because they can be very scalable and then also increase the impact, the potential impact of these scientific findings.
Yeah, very often when I talk with tech transfer officers, their preferred partner is an industrial partner who already has access to customers. And the second best option that I saw on the market is putting it into a startup. But mostly the preference goes to the first option. How do you see these two possibilities, startups and licensing to industrial partners?
I think it, of course, depends on also whether there is a team for the startup. So also I see in my work different opportunities based on whether there are interested scientists to support the creation of new business and perhaps to become entrepreneurs, whereas in some cases where there is no team, where there is, for example, a patent application or in some cases several, then in that case, of course, the researchers need to support and their knowledge is required and necessary for efficient translation. But in those cases, licensing is in many cases the best option. And of course, I think university business collaboration also plays a role in this context. So how to make these interfaces work even better, how to make communication and exchange across these kind of boundaries more efficient.
I mean, I'm smiling a little bit because 18 months ago, when I talked to friends and family about topics like tech transfer, nobody could really do something with these topics. And the last 18 months changed a lot because I think the entire human race or entire population in the Western world got some training into how vaccines and diagnostics are developed. And when I open today newspapers like in Austria, for example, Die Presse, or also when I read through Newsweek, there are many, many, many articles that explain in great detail and in high quality how this deep tech world functions and works. So also, let's say people outside science are currently a little bit accustomed to tech transfer. But one question pops up quite frequently, and this is, why is it necessary to transfer ideas or patents or trade secrets or trademarks from universities to companies? Why are the universities not trying to commercialize themselves, their inventions? What's your opinion on that?
Well, I think here we can also go back to the bigger picture. So on one hand, the researchers and the TTOs in the middle and the industry. But surrounding all of this is, of course, the society and the transfer process is rarely linear, so it's not always step by step. If you follow this route, then successful technology transfer happens. So it's a lot about network interactions, different communities, different networks interacting, having a dialogue. Also, for example, the societal needs to some extent affecting the research topics. And then the research topics, of course, giving back to the society through, for example, knowledge transfer and technology transfer. And thinking about the incentives of different these different three groups that I mentioned. So for researchers, it's, of course, rewarding to see their research findings benefiting the society, because that's ultimately one of the main reasons for studying things, developing new solutions. And then, of course, it's a way for the universities also, through income from licensing or different revenue streams through technology transfer, to get additional funding that can be reinvested in further research. So this is, of course, also a benefit for the research community. And for universities as a whole, they have the research kind of research task, then they have the education task, and then they have the third mission, which is the societal interaction and creating something and having a dialogue with the society. So it's also related to this. And of course, I think technology transfer doesn't happen automatically. So we need the TTOs, we need the businesses around this community. We need the interactions to make it really happen. And for example, in the McKinsey report, it was also highlighted that we need the skills, the right people also to do the technology transfer. We need the funding, we need the mandate to do that. and this kind of thing. So it's a really complex environment. And yeah, actually, maybe I can say something about the typical tasks of the technology transfer offices.
Sure, go ahead.
So they are also, I often talk about TTOs without remembering to define this. So TTOs are technology transfer offices in universities or research organizations. And it is their task to facilitate this process. But it goes also to kind of prepare different projects and identify different opportunities so that they can go into this funnel and so that the best cases can be then selected and filtered out. And also in that sense, it's important to select the most promising cases to really use the resources wisely. So it's a lot about first identifying these inventions, the most promising ones, then providing, for example, IP, intellectual property protection and legal support that is necessary to first secure the base for successful commercialization. Then when going towards the market or finding suitable partners, it's about marketing. It's about internally educating the scientific, the research community about these possibilities and really bringing the communities together and providing support for the most promising cases.
I think this is an interesting area that you describe here. And you mentioned one particular word that I really like in that context. It's network. So it's a networked economy. And it reminds me of time when I was doing research in the 90s. It is a book from the University of St. Gallen. It's in German. So it's the networked company. And this was a new concept back in the 90s when the internet started. And I think it describes the environment in which tech transfer offices and universities and early stage companies and industrial partners work very well. Because taking technology out of universities into company, it doesn't matter if it's a startup or it's a huge industrial partners, is a special task that needs a lot of skills and a lot of specialized people that cannot be hired in a straightforward way. I would say you cannot put an announcement into, let's say, Germany, the Bild-Zeitung, and you get 10 applications. So very often it's a dynamic process where people meet each other by chance. And this networked economy is really, really, in my opinion, a challenging field because we constantly have to bring a lot of people and organizations together, make them interact, and hope that the right people find themselves through interaction. And I'm interested in hearing from you how you see these challenges in this specific area for tech transfer offices.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You love listening to podcasts, but have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Maybe you want to build a brand, grow your business, or are looking for an excuse to talk about your favorite hobby. Whatever your reason for making a podcast, Buzzsprout is the place to start. Since 2009, Buzzsprout has helped over 300,000 people launch their own podcasts. Buzzsprout walks you step by step through the whole process and will give you powerful tools to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. Ready to get started? Click the link in the show notes to get our free step-by-step guide to starting your podcast today.
That was a super good point about networking and networking, especially strategically. So I think it's even if it's sometimes a coincidence that you happen to meet somebody who can help you further, for example, a suitable VC or suitable company representative who can help you with the technology transfer case, actually you can really increase your chances by utilizing the right networks. So of course, within technology transfer as a field for the TTOs, there are specialized networks that can help in promoting the technology transfer as a field, as well as increasing the skills of the technology transfer managers. And then there are industry-specific networks, for example, related to life science. You know this really well. And it's important to have also technology transfer managers who can understand field-specific needs and participate in field-specific networks. So And I think, of course, digitalization has really provided a huge opportunities here. There are numerous different networks nowadays and more coming all the time for matchmaking and really targeted interactions so that the industry needs can meet the scientific so that there can be matches between the industry needs and the scientific results and inventions and innovations.
I think it's very interesting how this environment changed. When I think back to the 90s, when I did research at the University of Graz in economics, nothing like tech transfer or something like that existed. And what I liked in this area was the creative approach. Basically, people say could do what they wanted as long as it was research and nobody guided them. And I think this is also a principle of science, that science is free to do research in any area, to explore new ways of doing things and finding new knowledge. Then after graduating, I decided as an economist, I should see how the reality in companies and big organizations is, and switched to bigger public companies and experienced a completely different world. So this world was focusing on plans, on targets, on goals, on processes. There was almost no creativity, but people had to execute towards a certain goal in a straightforward way. And I think it's still the same. So we have on one hand science, and on the other hand, we have these process-oriented big players in the field to move technology forward. But when I look at these two mindsets, in my opinion, they are completely different, and they are really challenging to unite into one people. So that on one hand, the person is creative scientist, on the other hand, process-minded business expert. How do you see this, let's call it, clash of mindsets in the area of tech transfer? Because basically we need both mindsets in this area to move things forward. How do you see how that can work?
Yeah, I think one person, of course, can't be everything in itself. So it's important to bring really communities together, and tech transfer is rarely done. Like all of the activities are rarely done by one person. So it's really a team effort involving scientists, involving IP experts, involving legal experts from the beginning of the process. And then to when an invention has been identified, for example, then how to really approach, for example, big pharma, how to approach different types of companies. It's important to on the academic side to educate the scientists also in what is important in this process, how to, for example, talk about their research, how to also make it understandable to the broader community, to how to, for example, as an example, podcasts. we are in a podcast here, how to talk about the research so that only also non-specialists can understand it. And I think different communities, different networking events nowadays in a lot of ways are digital as well. But I think we are all also missing the personal interactions, the live interactions. But in whatever way, it's about bringing the communities together, really also having these intermediaries, for example, TTOs, to facilitate this dialogue between the scientists and the companies. And I would say it's first to create these interactions, create the interfaces, and then really try to understand the needs of different partners.
The communities have evolved in a great way in the last 15 years since I started working with in life science companies. When I think back, say 12, 13, 14 years ago, scientists approached me. There were rarely any tech transfer offices at the universities. It was the time of 2008, 2009. And usually the process was, I have a patent, let's do something with that. What do you think what we can do? And when I look now on the ecosystems, we have incubation programs, we have acceleration programs, we have a lot of public support, public grant support, we have a lot of let's say, shared offices where people come together, put together, who have ideas and who don't know how to turn it into a business yet, but find like-minded people. How do you see the advantages and disadvantages of this ecosystem that has evolved since, say, in the last 20 years?
You mean the ecosystem around it scientifically or more in the tech?
Scientifically tech transfer oriented organization.
Well, the scientific community has always been kind of global, of course, to some extent in the early years, restricted by the access to the information. But nowadays, information is readily available. And there are, of course, also more and more open access initiatives. So access to scientific information has hugely increased, and not only within the scientific community, but also out to the outside world. And in technology transfer, I see a huge improvement or trend towards more systematic collaboration, more systematic initiatives, and also more resources put into this field. But of course, as the McKinsey report says, I think this need for technology transfer and efficient technology transfer, skilled technology transfer, will definitely increase even more in the future. So we are on our way to making this field even, or accelerating this field even more. But I think the need will even duplicate in the future, or even more.
No, I see it similar. I think I completely agree with the McKinsey report. I mean, we have a lot of scientific inventions. I mean, as I said, not only patents, also data or other know-how that can be used or can be turned into products or useful services later on. But definitely we have a lack of these translators between scientists and people who understand what it takes to run a business. And these are really two completely different worlds that have to interact and be linked together. And Europe is on a good way, but there's still a lot of work to be done. And just when I look on the changes during the pandemic, I mean, I see it in my circle of friends as well. Before the pandemic, nobody could really do something with what I'm doing and why I help scientists and why anybody pays for that. When you need a drug, or a vaccine, you go to the doctor and there it is. So now, in my opinion, with the success of the BioNTech and Moderna vaccines that were able to bring a novel vaccine to the market through all the regulatory hurdles, accomplished everything diligently within only 12 months. It was really amazing. It was really amazing to see how scientists collaborate on a global scale effortlessly with a huge support from politics and the regulators to make that happen. And I ask myself very often a question. I mean, if we can take that dynamic and conserve it in the industry and also spread it into other areas, like, for example, cancer research, or fighting other viral diseases, maybe we could really have a chance over the next 10 years to solve the major illnesses of the human society. And my question to you is, what changes did you see in your area, in the area of tech transfer through the pandemic? Do you think this positive spirit will remain? Or was it just one moment in time and cannot be reproduced?
I think it's really the wonderful time to see technology transfer in these times, definitely. And what has happened, for example, with the example that you mentioned, is really remarkable. And it really shows that almost anything is possible if there are the funds and the right people to do it. And I'm very positive. I'm an optimist by nature. So I believe through these difficult times, to some extent, I think through these we have really created something unique, and I think this trend will continue. Of course, we need the politics, we need the decision makers to support this. We need them to understand what is the role of technology transfer, how it can accelerate the creation of new business and the transfer the creation of impact from new science and the transfer of the technologies, new ideas from science to new business, and then societal impact and societal benefit. So I'm very positive, and also thinking about what kind of opportunities we have now and what's coming. The digitalization will make this even easier. And I would say it's my vision to, and it's my mission also, to make technology transfer even more efficient and really identify where we can speed up this process, which parts are necessary, which parts maybe need to be recreated, or what is not there yet. So let's see what the future brings, but I'm very positive.
Yeah, let's, when I heard from BioNTech, for example, that they were able to bring a vaccine to the market within 12 months, I thought, oh, what a, that's really remarkable, as you say, and amazing, because before it took minimum of 10 to 15 years. And then I thought, wait a minute, was it really 12 months? And I digged a little bit deeper and found scientific reports on the internet. And I just can roughly sum it up from the top of my mind because I don't have it available. But the early days, or the days when these mRNA vaccine ideas were first put into a scientific paper at the university, dates back 30 years. So it, I think it was around 70s, 80s when the first steps were done in that direction. And also BioNTech did already clinical trials in cancer patients, where they tried first to prove that mRNA vaccines can help people. And then they turned it into a vaccine against viral diseases. So, but the point is that the full development was not really 12 months. It was about 30 years to come to the point to bring something to patients. And when I read through the newspapers, and there's a lot of controversial discussion, of course, I mean, 12 months, and if it's too quick, or if it was really done properly. But what we should not forget, that the entire research, many people worked a longer period of time to come to a point where they can bring something to patients. Also, BioNTech was founded, I think, back in 2008 or 2009. So they already had the history. And when I look at the newspapers today, we are so focused on these 12 months. And what I fear is that a little bit of misconception might arise in politics, that it's really quick to turn science into a business, because it's not. So we need to invest now into science so that we have the solutions available when we need it in 20 or 30 years in the future. Do you see any risk that because of this huge success of BioNTech and Moderna, that we might in future overestimate the speed of development of deep tech?
That's a super important question. So, of course, we need to continue the dialogue about how science is made, what is the technology transfer process related to it, and that all science is based on the huge body of results and scientific reports that came before. So, of course, groundbreaking innovations can be done any day, but it is rarely completely new. So it's always based on this background, based on the science that came before that. And also, as you mentioned, even in this case, regarding the mRNA vaccines, it is not, there is a huge history behind it. There's a huge number of scientific publications. And thinking about the future, you mentioned that, or asked that if my my opinion is whether this will continue. I think in general, we are accelerating the production of results. More and more scientific results can be, thanks to many different new technologies, created quicker, and of course disseminated quicker and exploited quicker. So this will in any case increase, but we need to remember that scientific work is really meticulous, and scientists, they are creating new inventions all the time. And then I think it also comes to the identification of the most promising ones. So, and it comes to the networks and the interactions between, for example, the scientists and then the TTO and the industry. So we need to make these these interactions seamless and really bring the actors together, create dialogue so that when something is identified, it can, in a fast way, be utilized.
I think let's stay a little bit on this question of the if the effects will be lasting. I mean, I see one particular problem in the diary, but maybe it's just because I'm coming from drug development. At universities, when I look at designs at universities, they come up with great concepts, great ideas, but these ideas are not yet products. So the universities very often are not the places where really product design in a commercial scale happens. And when I look at companies, we have a lot of experts who understand how to finalize products, bring it to markets, bring it to consumers or patients. But I think in between, we have a huge gap still after the TTO and before the industry. And from my experience, when I look at this specific area, this what comes after tech transfer and what comes before the industry, we have this dynamic startup area. And looking at this area for deep tech, I think we have really here a funding problem, because those people who operate in that field really rarely get the right funds to train, let's say, scientists and also people from the industry in that particular area, because we need this third mindset, in my opinion. So scientific mindset, the process-oriented industry mindset, and then we need the startup mindset. And in my perception, we have, in this translational field, we have a huge gap. How do you see it?
I see it kind of a lot the same way as you do. So we also need to ensure that we have sufficient capacities and sufficient that the inventions are actually ready to be transferred to the industry. And as you mentioned, there is a funding gap, and this can be, of course, we see that the funding is in general increasing, so there is a lot of hope, and I think this will change with time. But at the moment, still, I would say that more support would be needed, both when the scientific inventions are still at the universities and when the TTOs are supporting them, and then when they are, for example, brought to new startups. So this early stage funding is really critical, and something more is needed there. But I think the trend is going up, so I'm hopeful. And maybe one example that I can tell, I've worked a lot with so-called research to science, research to business projects. And these are normally focusing on exploring different business models for different scientific inventions when they are still in universities or research organizations, and making connections to the industry already there, bringing the industry partners into dialogue. And I think this kind of early stage support is really needed, and it's also needed case specifically. So in addition to, for example, broader programs that can foster entrepreneurship in the academia. But we need this kind of case-specific support after basic research, more towards maybe applied research, but especially towards strengthening the business potential of identified inventions that could be developed into innovations.
I mean, this collaborative projects in research are part of, I think, the scientific community for decades now. And also the granting schemes, like, let's say, Horizon Europe, for example, or also Horizon 2020, or all these European framework programs that came before, encouraged scientists to collaborate at scale. I'm just wondering, do you see initiatives that encourage scientists to integrate people from the industry and business-minded people in early stage research? So just to help to understand whether an invention can later on be turned into a product or not?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think it depends on maybe the specific environment and specific country, for example, how this is done. But it's in general important to educate the researchers about the specifics of the market related to their research. And, for example, encourage them to get in touch with the industry. I'm not sure The funding example that I mentioned is, of course, bringing, for example, industry partners into contact with researchers already at an early stage. So this is one example. But I would encourage researchers also to think about how their research fits into the bigger picture, what kind of business models there are at the moment. Does your research maybe fit into one of the existing business models? Who is working in that field? Or is it something that can be turned into a completely new business model? So these kind of questions I would encourage researchers to think about and really connect with different types of people and different networks also involving industrial partners.
So when we talk about the field of tech transfer and all these challenges, what are the three most interesting trends currently that you perceive in your area at the moment?
It's, I would say, digitalization, of course. So we were, like all the different fields, forced to embrace this in the past couple of years. But also it's brought huge benefits to the tech transfer community. Then different capacities. We have different types of fundings at the European level, for example, that can facilitate this process. There are, of course, also, so I think skills also, so the networks can really help technology transfer professionals enhance their skills and really benchmark, for example, their activities across boundaries, learn best practices, and so on. So I would say it's the skills, the capacities, and the networks.
Let's stay a little bit with the networks. I find it really, I think we are on a good trend. But I still think that Europe needs a lot of, a lot of more funds in that area and create more dynamics between the different countries. When I look at initiatives, I see a lot of local initiatives. So also here in Vienna. Also, I think in Finland, when I look on the Finnish landscape, from what I see on the internet, it seems to be also focused more on a local scale. Also, when I look at the UK, and there are only a few initiatives who connect these local hubs. I mean, it's ET Health or ERT in Europe. Then we have this Gene Network. But I think initiatives like EIT and Gene, who have a mission to build links between the local communities, are key to success for European scientists. How do you see this field? Do you think we need more of such initiatives, or do we already have enough?
I think definitely not enough. So I see a huge need also in that area. And thinking about the trends that we mentioned from the McKinsey report, there's a huge amount of high quality science coming from Europe and even increasing. We need support for this, and we need support to make the right connections across different countries and across even different continents, I would say, both for the funding and to make this in a strategic and clever way.
Sara, I would like to ask you one final question. Let's say somebody or scientist usually is interested in starting a tech transfer process because she made, in her opinion, a groundbreaking discovery, and she approaches you and at the conference, let's say, and you don't have a lot of time, and she doesn't have a lot of time either, and she asks you just one question. Sara, can you give me one quick advice? What should I focus on initially? What advice would you give her?
I think it's almost what I already mentioned. So to learn to describe the essentials of the invention in a way that also other people can easily understand if they're not from the same field. And then to study the market players, and connect to really relevant networks. And of course, if it's a researcher from a research organization or a university, to definitely connect to their TTO, the Technology Transfer Office, find out if there are suitable accelerator programs. And just start talking to people. And I think this process often is a way to refine the invention further. And not stay within the academia, but also connect to the outside world.
Great advice, Sara. Thank you very much for this conversation. And I wish you all the best for your future. And I hope you keep on helping scientists to turn their innovation into businesses.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Please share the podcast and make sure you've subscribed. Have a great day.